One very simple thing. I don't want to be given anything by you. I just want you to leave me alone so I can do it myself. And it also overlooks another very important thing. Perhaps I don't think that this republic is the summit of human civilization. Perhaps I don't want to become like Ronald Reagan or like the President of General Motors. Perhaps I have another sense of life, which in fact my situation here has forced me to trust. And perhaps I know more about you and your institutions than you know about me. And perhaps I have a judgment on them. Perhaps I don't want what you think I want. And if there's nothing you can give me, perhaps there is something that I can give you.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Thinking Black Loud. My name is Craig Davis, and I will be your host of Thinking Black Loud podcast. Today is the first episode of Thinking Black Loud, and I am very appreciative in you being here with me. Thinking Black Loud is a forward-thinking, progressive podcast that engages in difficult conversations about issues that impact Black people as it relates to race, education, politics, and every other place you find Black people. This podcast is also about highlighting the power of Black people, the passion of our movement, and the preservance of our purpose. And as I said, this is the first episode of Thinking Black Loud. This podcast is born out of what I've been seeing in the news and the media every day. This podcast is born from the concerns that I have as an African-American man living here in the United States in these times. This podcast is coming from my heart as it pours out for the pain that I see in Black people in the media. And I want to have conversations about that pain, that concern, and in some cases, the fear that I have because of what I see. And I want to have honest conversations about it. Now, today, my guests include Priscilla Davis, as well as Dr. Damian Davis, who will help me with today's conversation. So I just wanted to start off asking you both, how are you doing today?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
I am wonderfully well. Thank you for asking, Ms. Davis. That's nice to know.
I'm doing well, thank you. I'm doing well. I'm great.
All right, well, that's nice to know, Dr. Damian Davis as well. And like I said, this podcast is just a honest conversation about, you know, different things that we see in the media and how it relates to us. So I wanted to start off with Miss Priscilla Davis. Now, Priscilla, I know you raised your son in the 70s and 80s, and I know it was quite different from what we see now. Can you kind of elaborate on the difference from raising a child, a Black child, in the 70s and the 80s, as opposed to raising a child here in the year 2020?
Well, the difference I see is this is like a new world. This, I'm a baby boomer, and all this high-tech stuff is all new to me. Mm-hmm. And back then, things wasn't as fast as they are now, mm-hmm. you know. So we didn't have to worry about our children as much as we do now. You know, okay. it's just like a different world.
A different world. And and Dr. Damian, what would you say, how was life growing up and, you know, seeing all of these issues that still affect us to this day? What's kind of your take on that? How did you come up and how did you mm-hmm. kind of stay level headed?
Yeah, you know, for me, I guess it is. I mean, the difference is the access. It's easier to get access to so much now than when I was growing up. You know, when I was growing up, when it came to technology, you know, just to kind of piggyback off what Ms. Davis said, for me, it was, you know, television and radio, and that pretty much all that it was. Certainly you had video games. I grew up during the time where Nintendo was coming out, and Nintendo was the new thing. It became the new hit, the craze. And for me, you know, I had those games. But obviously now, you know, it's so different when it comes to technology because the access is there. You literally can just with any device, whether it's a phone or a tablet or a laptop or computer, you can just access so much. But you know, so that's different. So that's a good thing, mm-hmm. and in cases it's a not so good thing, because I also grew up in a time you needed to know information, you had to look it up in an encyclopedia.
Yeah,
now an encyclopedia is right. An encyclopedia now is Google, obviously. So, but how cool is it? That's easy. You know, that's great that you can access information like that. But once again, like I said, it's just scary. So very different.
And also wanted to talk to you, Ms. Davis, also about as far as like politics, you know, what we have right now, we have a president that's very, he's not mild-mannered, as we would say. You know, he's doing things off the cusp majority of the time, you know, saying hurtful and demeaning things, especially as it relates to, you know, Black women. We've, you know, heard him, you know, refer to them as, you know, nasty or, you know, having an attitude, or, you know, he has specific names for them. So do you see any difference in like how politics is right now as it relates to Black people, different from what you had experienced as you were, you know, coming up and raising a child as well?
Well, I see that he's like no other president. Okay. He's in a category all to himself.
I can agree.
He's not what I consider a statesman, you know,
mm-hmm.
and things are really like the same. Like, we still got racism. Mm-hmm. Well, we had racism back then too, but it was something after Dr. Martin Luther King came along, it kind of like, you know, kind of filtered down,
yeah.
you know, mm-hmm. but now it's just like, it's coming back up like it was when Dr. Martin Luther King was doing all that, you know,
marching
in the South. Mm-hmm. It's just like, and especially now they're not trying to hide the racism. You know, that's the scary part. You know, they're so blatant with it. I mean, anytime you can march and have a rifle in your hand and shoot people, you mm-hmm. know, why would you want to have a march rifle at a rally? When you got mm-hmm. a gun, you know it's going to be trouble because you're going to have all the anti groups, you know, for, mm-hmm. against, and all that. And, you know, it's just trouble. So I can't see why they would let people have guns at these rallies.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. I think it's a little hard for the Black man now. It was kind of hard then, but I think it's even more so now, for especially young Black men mm-hmm. in this day and age. You have to really talk to your child.
Yeah, you definitely do. I know.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I think the difference is that even though obviously that racism exists, and you have many, many, you know, whites who are very vocal about their feeling about Blacks, because times have changed, it's in the environment that it's inappropriate, quote unquote, right? And that's something you're not supposed to do, versus before it was okay. So it's really it's difficult for me to really think about, like, is it better now? Is it worse now? I don't even know. You know, for me, I'm not quite sure how to even answer that, because it was very bad. Certainly was bad during the time of Jim Crow. I mean, mm-hmm. because
that was
so
before.
That was before. And then since, let's say, since Dr. King and the civil rights movement, there was that little point where things, I guess,
seemed,
I don't
want to
say improve. I think it was an illusion for me. I think it was an illusion. I think I still think that it's part of the of a master plan, so to speak, in terms of the illusion of if society allows some Black people to raise to the status of either mayor or governor or even president, and if the society allows Black people to raise to the status of CEO of multi-billion dollar companies, if Black people now can be even billionaires, if society allows some of us to come up, then they use those individuals to kind of perpetuate this belief that all you have to do is believe in the American system, invest in the American system, and you too, if you work hard enough, you will succeed. But that is the plan to keep the system and the status quo the same. So that's how I look at it. And so I think that so much of that advancement that came out of the 60s and the civil rights was, unfortunately, it was used against us, right? Because once again, we all know when there was segregation, we had our own. We owned our own businesses. We became the Black Wall Street. Mm-hmm. And it's only after integration was legal, or should I say segregation was deemed illegal, and integration started, then we began to lose. So maybe in some senses, as I talk this out, in some senses, we are worse off, definitely economically, because we don't control our wealth like we used to.
Well, yeah. I think because as a person of color, you didn't get the privilege that the other, you know, races got, you know. Mm-hmm. First of all, you came here as slaves. You worked 400 years for nothing. You know, you couldn't build up anything. You had nothing to leave for your generation. You know, and all of a sudden they expect for us to be where they are. That's just crazy, you know. Mm-hmm. We can't be where you are if we done missed out 400 years.
Exactly.
We can't be there, you know. But we're doing good where we are to get what we got now, you know. I think that we're doing good as a people. We just need to come together more, you know, and just really stop shooting each other.
We're fighting each other. The little stuff that we do have, we have to fight 12 rounds just to get that. I mean, even looking at this whole thing with the COVID, you know, a lot of small businesses, medium-sized businesses, they are suffering, even to the point where they're going out of business, and they have to file Chapter 11 bankruptcy, and they're going out of business. So, but there's money coming from the government to save the small business and the medium-sized business. However, now the Black businesses are having to fight to get to that money. Why? Because you got issue of incorrect information being given to Black business owners. And so Black business owners are told the wrong information. They're given the incorrect deadlines to submit applications. And so when they begin to submit those applications to get federal dollars to save their business, the applications when they submit is beyond the deadline. And so they miss the deadline. And so they can't even get them. But it's not their fault. They were given wrong information or given wrong paperwork. Mm-hmm. So once again, you got people, Black people, trying to make an honest living, but you have a system that is keeping them from doing it. So what we do have, we continually have to fight all the time just to get just the little stuff or the little advancement that we got.
Yeah, and that's certainly understandable. I know. Last week, I shared with you both with, you know, what's going on in the world and specifically, you know, the George Floyds, the Breonna Taylors, the Jacob Blakes. But particularly last week was the Jacob Blake situation. And I had a moment where I felt helpless in a sense, because we see these small steps that we are, you know, taking to, and I say we as in the United States, we see the United States taking small steps, you know, to for equality for all. But, you know, like you said, with Black people, they're having to, you know, do extra and go that extra mile. And, you know, that scares me more than anything, because, you know, one thing I worry about is, you know, us going back to a place where it's somewhat of a civil war, in which that is scary, you know, within itself. But then also, you know, we have a president that is, you know, he guns up his base with, you know, some of his rhetoric. And I think some people in his camp, in his base, they know this is not right. You know, how we are discriminated against, you know, how we're treated. But you know, when he says these things, it kind of like just, it reels, you know, these folks back in. And that's the scary part, because I want us to move, you know, for a better tomorrow, a better future. But I just, these things with, you know, when it comes to politics and politicians, it really scares me. So, but like I said, I shared that with you guys last week. And I had never, what was so crazy is I had never felt that way, even though there was a time where, you know, Black men were getting, you know, shot every day, left and right. I still had a little bit of hope. But as of now, it's like my hope is just continuously dwindling, you know, and I just don't want to get to a place where, you know, I just don't believe in anything. So yeah, so that's, you know, my take on it.
I know for me, I know, like, for me, I always find it really important, for me it helps me to connect with people who are like mind. Mm-hmm. Because it helps, it, you know, it reminds me that that I am sane, because you can look at TV and you can look at TV and you see the insanity that goes on. But if you're looking at the insanity on the television, you know, all day, what is insane, it becomes normal. Mm-hmm. And so the insane becomes sane. Mm-hmm. And if you're watching that and, you know, you're taking that in, you're like, what then? And you know, it doesn't agree with your thinking. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. So you're like, am I the crazy one? Because what am I seeing? And so that's when I need to connect with people who are of like minds with me, because it's, if nothing else, it's a reminder that, okay, I am the same one. And what I'm looking at is the insane stuff. Mm-hmm. And it reassures me. And I realize how important that is with the conversation. You know, it's just, you know how it is. You have conversations with people and you know, you're on the same level. You think, you know, the thinking is the same. And there's this agreement. And in that agreement or in that connection, it just makes, it really comforts you.
It helps you.
And it helps you, because you're like, okay, I know that my thinking is correct. And what I'm seeing is something completely far gone. And for me, that grounds me. That's another word. Like, it grounds me. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, but I totally understand.
But that's why sometimes you just have to stop watching what you're watching. You know, give it a break, you know. And so I get back with you at a later date. But right now, I got to go read me a book or something, you know, leave the TV alone, or listen to a take that's positive or something, yes. You know. Because if you keep looking, especially being with COVID and you cooped up in the house, you know, and if you're by yourself, that's not an easy job. That's all you got is the TV, you know. Mm-hmm. So you got to try to put something positive on the television. You got to try to get you a good book, something with a deep meaning in it. Mm-hmm. You know, I like to read spiritual books myself, you know, because I like to enlighten my mind, my spirit. Because I know if I keep my spirit going, I am going to be okay. You know, so I like to get in the word, and that really helps me out a lot. And that's when I know I'm saying, because I know I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing.
I know. And that's another. Yeah. Definitely reading and right. Getting into those kinds of books that really help to ground your spirit. Yeah. But you know, that's the thing. And here's another thing, too, reason why I like to connect. Because you realize too that majority of the people out there, because that's them too. I think I know when I watching the news and stuff like that, you kind of wonder if majority of the people out there are thinking like this. And I'm talking about, you know, with the like right wing folks and these folks that got the guns and shooting people. Like, are these the majority of people thinking like this? And you realize when you connect with the organizations, and connecting doesn't necessarily mean talking to people, but it can be just reading. Once again, reading material, reading blogs, magazines, and stuff like that. And then now you can get connected with various online social communities that that reflect your principles and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But in doing that, it helps you to realize too. I know for me, is that okay? Majority of people are good people, right? Majority of people actually see this madness and they don't agree with it, and they really want to do something about it. Now, what I also realize too is majority of people want to do something about it, but majority of people feel powerless, and that's the thing that I don't particularly like, because we have to understand that we do have power.
You do have power
to enact change. But in any event, the fact of just majority of people actually disagree with this. And so that also helps to put in perspective for me too, that, okay, most folks got sense. All right.
Right. Yeah. They got sense. Yeah. Everybody is not like that. Everybody is not a racist. You got a lot of good people, you know, in this world, you know. Of course, you're going to have the ones, the bad apples. That's in every race, you know. Whatever you're going to be in, it's always some bad apples, but you know, but you don't let your mind go there where you mess you up, where you have you hating all people, you know, because everybody is not like that. So you just got to pray for the ones that's like that, you know, and love the ones that's not like that. Right. Pray for the one, they need prayer. They need it.
and also too, like, you know, to piggyback off of, you both, as it relates to, you know, if you're constantly watching, you know, the news, the media, you're going to you keep saying the same thing. And I know for me personally, I know it's not good to look at a news, you know, just 24/7, you know, each and every day. But also too, like for me, it allows me to have conversations with people about like what's going on in the world. And for the first time, as a, you know, when it comes to racism for me, or race, talking about race, has always been very uncomfortable for me. Up until probably early this year, you know, there was a gentleman at my job, and he was an older white guy, and we just talked about everything. And, you know, we talked about race. And at the end of the conversation, he said, he himself said, you know, while, you know, I've never spoken with a young person, you know, around your age that knows so much. And I'm like, you know, it's because I watch the news, you know, and it's, and then also too, it's just an easy kind of like, what they say, icebreaker. you know, and, you know, open up and just get someone's, you know, take on it. Because I can take someone, you know, disagreeing with me, you know, if they're a Republican, I'm a Democrat, you know, we both have different things that we believe in. So only thing I just ask is that, you know, the politicians, you know, are that they have just some kind of human decency, you know, and understanding, you know, because I think that's a way for, you know, people to connect with one another, like you said, as well, Damien.
Yeah, I mean, you said a few things, actually. I just want to talk about how the challenging part of having conversations with other people about race, that is hard. It's hard to do, particularly because having conversations about race, and if you are a member of a race that pretty much if you're Black or Hispanic, you know, those two races just historically have been segregated and have been recipients of so much racial hatred. The emotions are high. So when you talk about race with members of other races, you talk about those racial topics, emotions going to come with that. And those are difficult conversations to have. And they are, and rightfully so, they should be. I'm cautious of somebody who can have a conversation about race and be so far removed from emotion. To me, that doesn't make sense, because if you care about what has happened to you and your people and what is happening to you and your people, you better have some type of emotional connection there. So yeah, that is difficult. Those conversations for me, I don't, and this stuff like this always happens, and I always say the same thing. Now we have a Black woman who is running for Vice President of the United States, and so everyone, when the announcement was made, everyone, now all the Black people are on the news saying, all right, now let's have more conversations about race. We need to have more. And that's something you hear a lot that comes from Black people. We need to have more conversations about race. Now, once again, this was said way back when President Obama decided to run for the president. And of course, when he became the president, you heard that too. We need to have more conversations about race, and even asking the question, are we now in a post-racial society? And Black people are always talking about, we're always the leaders of saying, we need to have more conversations about race. We need to have more. How much more talking do we need to do, considering our long history of being in this country and treated the way we've been treated? What more, honestly, what more do we have to say? I don't understand that concept. It's in the books. History is written.
Right, there it's it is. Not, history is in the book.
It's
that's
there.
What I'm saying. Know your history. And you see, a lot of people don't know their history. I mean, it's a lot of Black people don't know their history. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of Caucasian, they don't know the Black man history, you know? And so
they
don't understand it. They don't understand it.
You're right about that, because, and I'm saying that because the people who are talking about, let's have more conversation about race, I notice it's really like the Black politicians who are saying it, but it is the younger Black politicians, you know. It's people who are in their 30s, 40s, but they're the younger politicians who, I mean, even at that age, they should have gotten something about history, but maybe they didn't.
They did.
But it is very true. Because if Black people had a firm, complete understanding of our history, period, especially our history in this country, and understand the nuances of that history, not just the fact that we came over here as slaves and Abraham Lincoln set us free, And the only slaves they could name are probably Harriet Tubman, especially now since the movie, and maybe Frederick Douglass, maybe. You know, what if we understood the nuances of our history, and it became not just a part of something we experienced in the classroom, but it became a part of our culture that we lived on a day-to-day basis, we wouldn't be saying that we need to have more conversation. We wouldn't be saying it because we understand conversation has been had. Mm-hmm. Conversation has never stopped, quite frankly. When have you seen, heard, and any Black leader have stopped having conversations? The people that we know that are out there today, from the Jesse Jacksons to the Al Sharptons and others, they're fighting for Black rights, Black equality, Black justice. They've been fighting for years and years and years. And so the conversation has never stopped.
Because it haven't changed.
So what do you mean this is just a beginning? We need to begin to have, or this is a begin. Are you kidding me? Where have you been all of your life? You finally just got on the train. That's what it is.
That's what it is.
And now you want to act like you've been on the train since day one. You just got on the train. And that's why you sound like you sound.
Right.
Which is ignorant.
But I think that, I don't know, sometimes I think that Black people felt like slavery was something to be ashamed of, you know, and they didn't tell their kids, you know, through generations. It's just like the other Jews. They teach their children their history coming up through biblical times, you know. But we don't do that. I know we can't go back to Africa because we don't know nothing about Africa, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we know about these United States of America,
mm-hmm.
you know. Mm-hmm. And somebody from Africa, I know they weren't allowed to read or write, but that's why we had no communication.
Mm-hmm.
We couldn't speak African, and if the kids that was born here after slavery, they couldn't read or write, they couldn't speak African. So, you know, we're just like lost people, lost tribe,
mm-hmm.
a lost tribe of people. But we should have, we know the United States of America, and we should be teaching our kids from the time that we got here to the time up to now that our Black kids should know their history. I think if they knew their history, they'd be a little bit more respectful for life, you know, mm-hmm. of other people's lives.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to get back to your statement about politicians being more humane and more, you know,
compassion and dignity, yeah. and all of that.
The thing about it, and this is the sad part about it, is that many politicians get into politics or being what they call civil servants for good reasons. Their heart in the beginning is in a good place.
Right place.
But the system, and that's the part that we just don't get. And I don't, once again, for the life of me, I say that as a just a figure of speech, because I do understand why we don't get it, but the system.
It's the system stop you.
Is set up in a way where mm-hmm. the system was not designed for the advancement of Black people. So no. There is nothing that can happen that you can do in this system as it is practiced now that will promote our advancement. And so many of us get into politics for the opportunity to change. Because mm-hmm. let's be honest, a lot of these political positions, they're not well paid positions.
Right.
You know, you don't get you're not a millionaire being a mayor of a city. I mean, if you're a millionaire and you're the mayor, it's because you were a millionaire before and right. you just became a mayor, you know? So we don't get into these roles to make a lot of money and become wealthy. We actually want to do something. Now, we want to make some changes, but here you go. See, here's the thing. How can change be made if your people that you represent are powerless. Perfect example. Historically, Black colleges and universities struggling. They've been struggling for quite some time financially. But they're struggling financially even more so now. Now, the problem is that when it comes to historically Black colleges and universities, our alumni, right, we do not, those who have graduated from these HBCUs, we do not financially support the institutions from which we graduated.
Support back in the community.
And so because we don't do it, these HBCUs still have to turn to organizations or companies that really may not have our best interests in mind,
but they need
for cash because they need the money to keep the doors open.
Right.
So now if you got to go to companies to get money and these companies don't necessarily represent your best interest, then what does that mean? That means that those HBCUs and the presidents and the board of those institutions, they have to begin to compromise.
Oh, yeah.
Compromise our best interests because they have to go to those places to get dollars. We do not support our own. Imagine if our HBCUs were fully funded by us. Now, another problem with that is Black people, we don't make as much money as our white counterparts.
Right.
I mean, I think it statistically is out there. There's data that show that a white man with no college degree, with just a high school diploma, makes the same amount, if not a little bit more, than a Black man with the college degree. Now, what does that say?
That is sad, isn't it?
Yeah. So now once sad. Again.
And then with the college degree, you got a school bill to pay. Mm-hmm. And I don't have a school bill.
Let's not even talk about debt. So you got Black people who are statistically we're poor because we make less. We have higher debt. So even if we do graduate from a college or a university, we're not in a place financially to even support the institutions from which we graduated. So once again,
you know,
that's part of the system.
But let me say this. I think every little bit counts. You may not have the big dollars to give if you're alumni, but you can be consistent in giving the little dollars. So if everybody be consistent and doing the little dollars, you can do something with that, but you just gotta give. You say, well, I don't have a lot of money. You know, you gotta stop thinking about yourself, you know. You gotta think about other people.
The numbers are still not, you're right, but the numbers are still not there.
You do what you can, but it won't be as much as the other people get.
But these institutions need millions and millions and tens of millions of dollars to keep their doors open.
To
fund programs and curriculums and majors and all this kind of great stuff. And then also just to simply compete, because yes, we want HBCUs out there, but we don't want them to be, we don't want the standard of the education to be less than.
You got to have good teachers, right. You got to have
You have to stay competitive.
Right.
And so that costs money. You have to have the best professors to teach that. They want to get paid. It's going to take more than just the little dollars you're going to need. Serious cash donations from companies and corporations. And so that's what I'm saying. But my whole point going back is that the civil servants, those Blacks that get into politics, they are not supported financially, economically, by their constituents, you know, those who look like them. And because of it, they have to compromise. The system is set up that you have to have, you know, you have to make so much in order to be in this office or run for that office.
Mm-hmm. You have to have money
for advertising and all this kind of stuff. It once again, you know, the argument, they can always do it grassroots. Yeah, but in today's time, the today's time doesn't fit or call for grassroots. You know, no. You have to connect with people where they are. And so, but it's part of a system that is uniquely orchestrated in a way that if, and in many cases, it's not just a Black thing, but a poor person's thing, because the system is strategically manipulated where if you just are a poor person, regardless of your color, it's difficult, you know.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I know you and I had a conversation a couple of weeks ago, particularly about Kamala Harris. And, you know, I think it was the day after they had announced that she was going to be the vice presidential nominee for the Democrats. And it was one of those conversations on the program where you had a lot of the Black leaders, you know, of various organizations. And, you know, and they were pushing that, you know, as you said, let's start having more conversations. And I think you you alluded to, you know, why do we have to keep, you know, having these conversations? In a sense, we, you we know what it is. And I think I told you to, you know, I'm like, I'm just happy that she is. I said something like breaking the glass ceiling. So that alone, I was, you know, I was happy about it. But when we talked about it, I was, you made perfect sense though, you know. Why is it that we're always pushing to, you know, have these conversations? And, you know, why are we the one that come to the table, you know, to talk about racial, you know, inequality and stuff like that? But after our conversation, like I said, you made a lot of sense. And so, you know, now it's kind of like dwindled down a little bit. You know, as far as, you know, when it came to specifically Kamala Harris, and us being excited and, you know, over the moon, because, you know, she's a Black woman that is, you know, could potentially be the vice presidential nominee. But then also, too, I realized that there is a system that does not work in our favor, does not work for, you know, Black people. But I myself, I can probably speak to some of that is that we do feel helpless. We do feel helpless. But I think at some point we have to, I don't want to say take it, you know, take it for what it is, but when do we stop having those conversations about us, you know, pushing for, you know, equality, pushing for, you know, a seat at the table? I feel like this is going to, you know, this is going to go on for some time. But what excites me is that the younger generation now, we're talking about, you know, high school individuals, they have a different outlook, and they are, you know, they're very aggressive with their messaging. They are very vocal about their feelings. So that gives me, that definitely gives me hope that, you know, one day we will get to a point where we don't have to have these conversations. But then also too, white people don't have to feel uncomfortable, because I think white people now in this space, I think they feel they're very uncomfortable, because, you know, you don't want it. You don't want them to come out. They don't want to come out and, you know, kind of like denounce a lot of this rhetoric, you know, that is consistently, you know, dividing us. So I think that's why they always look for us, you know, to kind of spearhead those conversations. I do want to thank you both for joining me today. It was an interesting conversation. So thank you, Dr. Davis, and thank you, Miss Priscilla Davis, for, you know, helping me out and just talk about a lot of these different issues that, you know, we face as Black people. But like I said, I am, you know, I have hope, you know, it may be a little, but I'm definitely hope we can get to that, that point. So once again, thank you. And I will talk to you guys later. Thank you.